Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Learn to fly. You are the teacher.
Good morning. It's time for Living in Tune. Turn your problems into joy with your host, Chloe Faith Wordsworth. This program will improve the quality of your life through a system called resonance repatterning. And now, here's your host, Chloe Faith Wordsworth.
Welcome to Living in Tune, Turn Your Problems into Joy. This week I'll be talking with Professor T. Colin Campbell, author with his son, Thomas M. Campbell, of the renowned book, The China Study. This best-selling book is creating waves. Based on one of the largest nutritional research projects ever accomplished, if not the largest, it shows the undeniable relationship between the kind of food you eat and the illness problems you may have now or later in life, as well as the relationship between the foods you eat and the level of health you enjoy, now or later. Colin Campbell, a distinguished professor at Cornell University, has provided us in the China Study with hardcore scientific research that shows us how to be healthy. The proof is in. We can avoid heart disease, diabetes, overweight, cancer, macular degeneration, and more. Today, Professor Campbell will show us how. This program of Living in Tune is about resonance repatterning, a system I started to develop in the early 1990s, which has spread around the world with practitioners in numerous countries from Chile to Europe, India to Australia, Mexico, and the USA. In resonance repatterning, we acknowledge that our body, emotions, mind, and spirit are frequency-based. We are energy beings. What we think is also a frequency that affects how we feel and the physiological responses of our body. Similarly, the food we eat and the colors of each food reflect its own unique frequency that affects not only our body's functioning, but also our emotional and mental states. In resonance repatterning, we focus on shifting our resonance with non-coherent thinking and feeling patterns that undermine our sense of well-being on all levels. As we change our thoughts and feelings and spiral to higher states of coherence, we become more aware of what we put into our bodies in terms of the quality of food we eat. As practitioners of resonance repatterning, we may work with people who have physical health problems, cancer, arthritis, heart problems, and so on. Knowing about Colin Campbell's research and having his book, The China Study, as a resource could save the lives of those you work with, or a family member's life, or your own. So I very much appreciate having Professor Colin Campbell on Living in Tune today to open our minds to some fascinating new possibilities. Welcome, Professor Campbell.
It's a pleasure being here.
Wonderful. Well, first question, as some people in our audience may not have heard of you, will you start by telling us about your background as a scientist and a researcher and some of your scientific achievements?
I came from a farm, a dairy farm in particular, went away to school eventually to Cornell University in graduate school and did doctoral research on attempting to show the value of consuming an animal-based food diet, the typical kind of diet that we tend to consume in the West, at least. But eventually, as time unfolded and I gathered some students and had a big research program that was funded by the National Institutes of Health, we spent many, many years exploring this question, you know, why is protein so good? Mm-hmm. And what we found, in fact, that when we consume protein in excess, it's not good. Mm-hmm. We could, for example, when protein is consumed in excess, in experimental animal studies in this case, we could turn on cancer, and when we decrease the protein intake, we could turn it off. The results are really quite dramatic, and as we went beyond that to ask questions, how does it work, we learned things like it doesn't work by a single mechanism, as we like to say in biochemistry. Rather, it works by a whole tsunami of highly integrated kind of mechanisms to produce this effect. But going still beyond that, we explored other nutrients. Eventually then turned our attention to a large human study in China so that we could sort of ask ourselves or determine the extent to which these early findings were related in a larger context to, let's say, the food we eat. Yeah. And what we found as we went forward, especially in the China Project, when we did a survey across China, in 130 villages to see why cancer was so common in some areas and not so common in other areas. What we learned from this combination of studies, and also I should add, too, that for about 20 years of my career, I worked in policy development in places like Washington and London and Beijing and so forth, on questions concerning the relationship between diet and health and what can and cannot be said from the scientific perspective. And when we put the whole story together, as we attempted to do in the book that I wrote with my son Tom and published in 2005, it turns out that the effect of nutrition on health, when done right, and what I mean by that, it means whole plant-based foods, without adding back a lot of salt, sugar, and fat, if you will. In any case, when that is done right, the effects that are produced are truly remarkable. We not only could prevent future diseases that many have heard about, such as cancer and heart disease and perhaps diabetes, but more to the point, what we also learned, and this comes from my physician colleagues who have come along and demonstrated this and had been demonstrating this, that we could actually reverse and treat diseases after they're already diagnosed. So the story became really quite huge and very impressive.
Yes. And so who organized and financed the China study? Who was involved with that?
The United States National Institutes of Health, NIH, provided the main funding as far as the capital is concerned, but at the same time the Chinese government in those days, this is the early 1980s, by the way, the Chinese government provided a huge offering of essentially professional labor, professional people working in the projects. So it was a combined contribution both from the Chinese government and the United States government, which was the first of its kind in research.
And wasn't Oxford also involved?
Yes. Oxford came in right at the beginning, particularly as a certain Sir Richard Peto, who was the world's leading authority in biostatistics, and he, together with his other colleagues, also contributed their time too. Once the data started coming in and helping us organize the study. So it was a combined study between Cornell University, University of Oxford, and two of the Chinese government academies.
Fascinating. Now, David Klein wrote, quote, "The China Study is the most important book to come out in the last 75 years," end quote. So what do you feel makes the China Study such an important book?
Well, when we use the term the China Study, that's the title of the book. And I say that because there is, of course, the China Project itself, which represents a portion of the book. But the results that we got in China become important when they're considered in the context of all the other kinds of research we're doing and the other kinds of research that others were doing, too. When the whole book and all this information is put together, that's how we sort of come up with the conclusions that we get that are so convincing.
Yes, and of course the conclusions were that so you actually were able to prove that the correlation between nutrition and disease in relation to plant-based foods.
Yeah, we're hesitant in science to say we ever prove anything, to be honest about it, on the one hand. But on the other hand, the evidence for this idea, consuming plant-based foods, vegetables, fruits, grains, and so forth, the evidence for that in terms of maintaining health, preventing disease, and actually restoring health, the evidence for that from all these different perspectives is so impressive that it really, in my mind, is equal to proof as far as using the information is concerned.
Yes. And this is interesting because you came from a background on a farm where you ate, I imagine, a lot of meat.
Yes, I did. And I milked cows. And one of the foods that turns out to be as problematic or more so than any of the animal foods is dairy. I find that troublesome personally when we first started getting this information, so we had to struggle with it and prove it, essentially. And so it's true. That's the diet I was raised on.
Yes.
But obviously we began to change our diet in my family.
Yes. And why is it that dairy is even more, it sounds as problematic as eating meat? Why is that?
Well, dairy is a good source of animal-based protein, which I once thought was very good, but when it's consumed in excess of the protein requirements, and virtually everyone does that, the protein of cow's milk was, in fact, the protein that we were using in the experimental animal studies to turn on cancer. Uh-huh. Experimental cancer in these animals. And when that cow's milk protein was decreased or was replaced with plant-based protein, we turned off this tumor growth. Mm. So we got to a point where we could turn it on and turn it off fairly easily by simply introducing or taking away the animal-based protein coming from cow's milk.
Amazing. And yes, that's fascinating. I imagine that was what the casein in milk, was it?
Yes, it was.
Yes, yeah. Huh. Now, a lot of people swear by the Atkins high-protein diet, and in terms of then of your scientific research, you must have a strong response to this kind of diet, I imagine.
Yes, we did. I remember when that came out, and it was counter to what we were talking about. But in reality, if one checks the book, reads the book, you'll find there's no science in there. There's no references, no justification given for this, to be honest about it, first off. On the other hand, the book did sell because it did produce results that people rather liked in the beginning. It tends to lead to a loss of weight initially. It tends, in some cases, to reduce blood cholesterol levels a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's impressive. People, and I can understand why they might like that approach. But people cannot stay on that. And in fact, they should not stay on it because in due course, and there's been a lot of research done on that now, other kinds of health problems begin to arise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to shorten one's life. Oh. So it's the wrong diet. It's simply the wrong diet in spite of the fact that it appears to give some impressive effects early on.
Yes. Yes, and I think in your book you were talking about kidney problems can develop and things like that.
Right, and there's a whole variety of things that now have been recorded in the scientific literature involving a comparison of that diet, let's say, with some other kinds of diet. There are problems.
Yes, and then what about this other popular idea of eating foods according to your blood type, one doing better on high-protein meat foods and another on plant-based vegetarian foods? How do you respond to that?
Well, again, when I first saw that book, I thought it was a reasonable idea to explore because, after all, blood type is a genetically determined sort of response. And I, of course, was always interested in whether cancer is a genetically determined thing and heart disease and so forth and so on, as opposed to nutrition, for example. So I actually got the book with some hope that I was going to see something there worth reading. But after I got into it, I really had trouble with the scientific explanations. There were some really fundamental errors, and there were recommendations being made that simply over time has not proven to be true.
Uh-huh. Yes.
The type O diet, for example, just to give one specific example, is supposed to be for people who are supposed to be consuming meat in order to get the best health. I'm type O.
Uh-huh.
And it's not true. I mean, obviously I'm case one, but I just returned from some talks at a school where there was a lot of interest. In fact, it was a school where the author was trained, and we talked about it a bit. It really doesn't work. It simply doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't sound like there's any scientific research follow-up on the work of the theories of that book either.
On the blood type diet?
Yes.
That's right. It's... I can't cite exactly the papers that have been done on that. We were just talking about this a couple of days ago. But the distribution of responses among people, according to blood type, is basically the same regardless of blood type. That's the distribution of people regardless of the diseases they get.
Uh-huh. Good. We will actually just take a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you very much.
You can dunk yourself through the chances that you take.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
Learn to fly. You are the teacher.
Is the key to life more than just another technique? In Chloe Wordsworth's new book, Quantum Change Made Easy, she shows that what you resonate with is the key to all positive change, self-healing, and achieving the best of who you are. Chloe introduces you to the 9 keys of the Resonance Repatterning System for harmonizing your energy and turning your problems into joy. You can order Quantum Change Made Easy at Amazon.com or your local bookstore. To have a session, go to ResonanceRepatterning.net for certified practitioners. You can also learn to do sessions on yourself by attending Resonance Repatterning seminars. Experience the magic of helping yourself and others with a system that combines scientific and spiritual principles. Go to ResonanceRepatterning.net for seminars, practitioners, and self-healing products. Listen to Chloe on the Seventh Wave Network every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time.
Listen closely because I'm about to ask you something that has probably never crossed your mind. Did you know that physical illness, depression, toxic relationships, financial struggles, even obesity, all have their roots in dysfunctional family patterns? Liz Tobin, a certified resonance repatterning practitioner, can help you begin to heal today. This breakthrough technique enables you to create positive change in any area of your life. You will effortlessly respond differently to situations and begin to attract new scenarios and opportunities in your life. Here is what people are saying about the Clearing Family Patterns Proxy Group.
This is planetary healing on a group level.
I've had this constant backache my whole life. It disappeared after just one session.
When you join the Clearing Family Patterns Proxy Group, you can clear these patterns. You'll be amazed at how each session seems tailored just for you. Try a free demonstration today. Learn more at LizTobin.com.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Learn to fly, you are the teacher. Learn to trust your wings, and the rest will follow after.
You're listening to Living in Tune, Turn Your Problems into Joy, with your host, Chloe Faith Wordsworth. Now back to the program. Here's Chloe.
And back talking with Professor Campbell, author of The China Study, this huge research that was done and proving as much as can be proved that a plant-based diet can both maintain health and wellness as well as help people to regain their health from very serious chronic diseases. And Professor Campbell, has your research shown that animal-based foods have nutrients that are not found in plant-based foods?
Well, animal-based foods, of course, have a variety of nutrients, a number of which are important to consume, in a sense. But there's no nutrients in animal-based foods that are not better obtained with good effect from plant-based foods. So, for example, animal-based foods, obviously, it's a good source of protein, as has often been said for decades now.
Mm-hmm.
We can get all the protein we need in plant-based foods.
Mm-hmm.
And not suffer the adverse consequences of consuming animal-based foods.
Mm-hmm.
Animal-based foods also tend to have little or no of the enormous variety of antioxidants, mm-hmm. which turn out to be very important, those being the chemicals that are produced by plants. And animal-based foods will sometimes have some of that material in them, but primarily because the animals are obviously eating plants.
Yes.
It gets into their bodies, they don't make it. Animal-based foods have none of the enormous variety of complex carbohydrates, as we say, dietary fiber, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have any of that. That kind of material, too, generates a good response health-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And so animal-based foods, like I say, really has nothing in them that we actually need, except for there is one, what appears to be an exception, is vitamin B12.
Mm-hmm.
People who consume plant-based foods alone, there is some recommendation that perhaps they should consider consuming B12, but not because the animals are producing B12. They don't any more than we do.
Mm-hmm.
B12 is actually produced by microorganisms present in the rumen of animals and also microorganisms in the soil. So we might be a little short of B12 from time to time, and we can get that from pills, if you will, and injections and things like that. But that's really a minor issue.
Yes, and of course vitamin D, which you can get from the sunlight.
That's right.
Yeah.
Vitamin D is not even a vitamin, classically. A vitamin is a chemical that we must consume because we can't make it. Well, we can make vitamin D. We can essentially make virtually all that we need to make if we just get out in the sunlight.
Yes. And also, of course, they've discovered that meat eaters are as deficient in vitamin B12 as vegetarians.
Yes.
So it doesn't really seem to make much difference. You know, in terms of this big thing, well, you don't get B12 if you're a vegetarian. It's like, well, you might be deficient in it too.
I've been inclined not to actually, you know, to be doubtful of the entire B12 claim for some years now. But I defer to my clinical colleagues who say that they do see at times being people being too low in B12 and maybe getting some consequences.
Yes. Now, some people feel that if they eat organic meat, that it's okay, rather than, you know, eating animals fed with growth hormones and antibiotics and so on. So basically, your research is proving that it's meat. Meat is meat is meat, whether it's organic or inorganic. It sounds like it doesn't make that much difference in terms of your health.
That's correct. I mean, I think that we can make arguments that organic meat, for example, can be better as far as health consequences are concerned in some respects on the one hand, but on the other hand, the work that we did, the results that we got, you know, from the feeding, for example, of animal-based protein, it's the animal protein itself, regardless where it comes from, whether it's organic or not organic, and it's the animal protein and the nutrient sort of composition of these foods that really make the difference in terms of the response we get. So I think, although there may be some differences between organically fed animals and livestock-based or feedlot-based animals, there might be some differences. They're rather trivial compared to the big effect of simply switching away from animal foods to plant foods.
Mm-hmm. Now, people who eat plant-based foods, who are vegetarians, may also be eating a high percentage of their calories as protein and fat also in the form of nuts and seeds and oils and even protein powder supplements rather than eating meat and dairy. So what's your research shown to be the difference between animal proteins and fats versus plant-based proteins and fats from nuts and seeds, where they may also be taking an excess amount of protein or a protein in excess of their needs?
Well, there's two questions here. For one, when we're consuming whole plant-based foods, it's very hard to consume excess protein unless we use supplements. And that's not necessary. If we're using just whole plant-based foods, we're going to get protein at a level of somewhere around 9, 10, 11, 12% or so of total calories. And that's ideal. That's all we need.
Yes.
We don't need more than that.
Yeah.
As far as the difference between the animal proteins and the plant proteins, it takes me back some years when I was working, in a sense, you know, with the alternative idea when I first started my career. Animal-based proteins are of an amino acid composition that generates the optimum growth rate. Good idea for livestock producers and feeding livestock, because if you can grow them faster by consuming animal-based foods, that was something that was to be desired for economic reasons, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Animal-based proteins are obviously rather like our proteins that we need. We need protein. But when you consume animal-based proteins, it generates growth faster as opposed to plant-based proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And that same is true. It will also generate the growth of cancer cells faster, too. That's the key.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. So it's not surprising to see that animal-based proteins are going to actually accentuate the growth of cancers and promote the growth of cancers.
Yes.
Rather than plant-based proteins.
Fascinating. And also, of course, if your antioxidants come from your fruits, your colorful fruits and vegetables, and the focus is on the meat rather than those, you don't have the antioxidants for getting rid of the cancer cells.
Right. I mean, this whole thing is really fascinating when you start to think about the mix of proteins in animal-based foods and the mix of nutrients in plant-based foods. You know, because these nutrients, you know, perhaps hundreds of thousands of different kinds, it's just not the few nutrients that we know about and talk about, but the natural order of things in the case of plants, or the natural composition that plants have, when we sort of look at the way in which this thing, all these chemicals work in a sort of symphony-like nature, the effects that we get is such that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Expression I'm sure you've heard many times before, but it's really true.
Yeah.
That when it's treated that way, rather than the highly reductionist way of looking at one nutrient at a time, which we tend to do, unfortunately, in science, when we're looking at the whole, and that's why I say whole plant-based foods, the effects essentially are representative of what nature has designed for us all these eons of years.
Yes.
And it really works.
Which, of course, then gets us to supplements, and that, especially in the USA, there's such a focus on trying to find the perfect pill. So, again, you're talking about the wholeness as against the parts. So, the anecdotal evidence, though, is that people observe improvements when they take supplements. So what's your sense of that?
Well, the anecdotal evidence at times tends to represent the fact that when people take supplements, their levels go up in the blood to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's said to be, you know, encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may, in fact, have some other sort of short-term effects that look promising, if you will. But now we've actually been doing that kind of research for more than 30 years now, rather systematically, studying these individual nutrients in clinical trials and the like. And now there's reviews coming out, reviewing all of that experience, and there, quite frankly, there's no evidence that nutrient supplements work to prevent these major diseases that we're concerned about. In fact, in some cases, we have evidence that these nutrient supplements actually exacerbate and increase the occurrence of these kinds of diseases. So it not only now we have practical evidence to indicate that they're not useful, but also from the theoretical perspective of understanding complexity and simplicity, you know,
yes,
the way biology works, it's entirely clear that these single nutrient supplements are not anywhere, they're not a substitute for whole plant-based foods.
Mm-hmm. But you also have supplements that are made from whole organic foods or that really try to combine combine complex nutrients. Do you,
yes,
is any value to
that? Just spoke, yeah, that's a good point. I just spoke about nutrients as individual nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there is some evidence these days that if you take a whole plant-based food and concentrate it down by removing the water, and by freeze-drying it and taking out, let's say, the bulky fiber material, you end up with a very concentrated source of all the nutrients in the right proportion, more or less, remaining active. And there is some evidence that that kind of thing may be rather different than using single-nutrient supplements. So,
but then if you're actually synthetically creating these nutrient supplements in the laboratory, not from that organic food, those whole plant-based foods, then you would just put that in the same realm as the individual nutrients then?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, an analogous area has to do with drugs. I mean, we know that most drugs, at least 90% or more, 95%, are originally derived from the isolation of some plant chemical.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't patent those chemicals, so we don't use them as drugs.
Yeah.
But what we do, we turn around and synthesize a derivative, a synthetic derivative. Mm-hmm. And then we end up using these chemicals as synthetic derivatives, namely drugs.
Mm.
We run into problems.
Mm. Even though it's a so-called good nutrient.
Yes. Mm. Yes. You can start out with the original chemical in the plant that may have some very good properties and are shown to have very good properties. But to take it out and put it in a pill, or to take it out and make some derivative of it, a synthetic derivative of it, in order so that we can patent, you know, the intellectual property, get intellectual property protection, to do all of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually taking a major step away from what nature has provided.
Yes. Now, one of the big fears many people have, of course, concerns cancer, and for a lot of women, the fear of breast cancer. And, you know, I find it heartrending when I hear of women and young girls having surgery to remove their breasts, when, in fact, sound nutrition could offer them much more protection. And would you talk more, then, about this high-protein nutrition in relation to cancer and more specifically about breast cancer?
Yeah, we explored in China some of the factors that are said to be related to breast cancer occurrence, and that was a population where breast cancer was only about 20% on average of what the rates are here, much, much lower.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there were areas in China where breast cancer was hardly ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an opportunity to explore some of these effects, these factors, these risk factors, if you will, and we're able to put together a model such that breast cancer is tightly coupled for a woman with the total exposure to estrogen-like hormones over a lifetime. And the total exposure is going to relate to two things. First, it's going to relate to the length of the reproductive period. In Western women, age of menarche is starting around 10, 11 years or so. Menopause is about 52 years on average. these are figures we had. In the rural Chinese woman, for example, the average age of menarche was 17 years rather than 10, 11, 12 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
Their menopause is at like 48 years. So they Western women tend to have a reproductive life of about 9 years longer first. Secondly, Western women...
Can we come back? Because we actually have to take a break, but let's continue this when we come back from the break.
It's how you conduct yourself through the chances that you take.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Marissa, are you ready yet? I know you can hear me. You are not missing school again. Marissa! You trying to be a nobody or something? Let's go! All right then. Hit it. I know you can hear this. Hey guys, move closer. That's it. Girl, I am not leaving.
Hey, whatever it takes, don't let your friends drop out. A real friend can make all the difference.
Cut that noise, yo! I'm coming!
Took you long enough. Thanks for the help, guys.
For more ways to help, go to OperationGraduation.com. A public service message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Learn to fly. You are the teacher.
Is the key to life more than just another technique? In Chloe Wordsworth's new book, Quantum Change Made Easy, she shows that what you resonate with is the key to all positive change, self-healing, and achieving the best of who you are. Chloe introduces you to the 9 keys of the resonance repatterning system for harmonizing your energy and turning your problems into joy. You can order Quantum Change Made Easy at Amazon.com or your local bookstore. To have a session, go to ResonanceRepatterning.net for certified practitioners. You can also learn to do sessions on yourself by attending Resonance Repatterning seminars. Experience the magic of helping yourself and others with a system that combines scientific and spiritual principles. Go to ResonanceRepatterning.net for seminars, practitioners, and self-healing products. Listen to Chloe on the Seventh Wave Network every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Learn to fly. You are the teacher. Learn to trust your wings, and the rest will follow after.
You're listening to Living in Tune. Turn your problems into joy with your host, Chloe Faith Wordsworth. Now back to the program. Here's Chloe.
Talking with Professor Campbell about this amazing China study, one of the largest nutritional studies ever done, and we're talking about breast cancer and that it's tightly coupled to exposure to estrogen hormones. So basically, the shorter the period time, the better, it sounds like. You were saying, weren't you, Professor Campbell?
Yes, breast cancer is associated with total exposure to estrogen-like hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about total exposure, I'm talking about, for example, the length of the reproductive life in a Western woman as opposed to the rural Chinese woman.
Mm.
The reproductive life of a Western woman is about 8 or 9 years or so longer.
Yes.
They start earlier, they end later. That's one thing. The second thing, the Western woman, because of diet, in large measure, their levels of estrogen-like hormones in their body is about 50% or so higher than the rural Chinese woman. So you take those two factors, the length of exposure and the concentration of exposure at any point in time, and it turns out that the exposure to estrogen-like materials in the Western woman compared to the rural Chinese woman is about 5 times greater.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the same difference as it is for breast cancer. And
now, isn't meat one of the things that stimulates estrogen?
Yes, it does. Animal-based foods tend to stimulate the production of estrogen, so it tends to elevate estrogen levels in a Western woman's blood. Mm-hmm. And that's what I said was saying a moment ago. That's one of the factors. So animal-based foods tends to increase estrogen-like materials.
Yes, and I've also noticed that vegetarian girls start their period much later.
Yes, yes, that's right. In rural China, it was, I mean, it really was very late. It was amazing. The average age, you know, for those 130 villages that we examined, the average age of menarche is 17 years.
That's right.
I mean, the average for some of the counties was as high as 19 years.
Yes.
They're starting their reproductive life much later.
Yes.
Which is to their advantage.
Yes, and certainly I've noticed this with the vegetarian people I know, that they often will begin their period at 16, 17, 18. So it's interesting, isn't it?
That's right. Hmm. The time when a young woman, you know, reaches that period, that's largely related to the rate at which their body is growing.
Hmm.
And we in the West tend to encourage not just the girls but the boys too when they're young. We tend to think that the fastest rate of growth is the best rate of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that by feeding animal-based foods.
Mm.
It's wrong. It's a big error.
Mm.
You ought not to do that.
Amazing. Now, cellular biologist Bruce Lipton talks about how the genes are activated according to our thoughts and perceptions and the feelings that go along with them. And just because we have a genetic predisposition doesn't mean to say that that gene will be activated. So would you talk about our genetic tendencies in relation to nutrition and cancer?
Yes, that was one of the major themes of my research over the years,
mm-hmm.
always exploring this question, the extent to which genetics on the one hand,
mm-hmm.
or diet and lifestyle on the other hand, would determine, you know, disease risk. And first off, I have to say that genetics is a very complicated field.
Mm-hmm.
We have, what, 20 to 25 different kinds of genes that can operate, you know, collectively and interrelate with each other in multiple different ways. And we're all going to have some genes that's going to increase our predisposition for various sundry things we'd rather not have.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's beside the point, because it turns out nutrition is able to keep under control the expression of those mischievous genes very nicely.
Mm.
And in fact, nutrition manages which of those genes get expressed and which ones don't.
Wow. So that's
a major story. So all this interest these days in trying to do gene array analysis to determine our disease risk, in my mind, is almost a total waste of time.
Wow.
And a waste of money, because we don't need to worry. Even if we learn, oh, we got some genes to do this, that, or something else, obviously it suggests to us we ought to do what? Not take drugs, by the way, which drug companies would like to tell us, but simply to eat the right food.
And
the right food, we keep those genes under control. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful,
amazing.
It's a beautiful picture of nature.
Whereas the meat-based foods can actually activate these very genes.
That's right. The meat-based foods will tend to activate these genes, especially the annoying ones.
Mm-hmm.
That can give rise to disease.
Wow.
So it's a beautiful story.
Amazing, amazing. So now, what did you observe in the China study concerning problems such as Alzheimer's and other mental problems in relationship to plant-based foods?
Well, we didn't learn about that in the project itself in China.
Mm-hmm.
The book, of course, we reviewed some of that. And one of the things that I became really impressed with was the breadth of this effect. In other words, when one is consuming plant-based foods as they should in the right way, it turns out that all of these kind of diseases, these chronic diseases, as well as the sort of problems like colds and flu and acne and things like that in the short run, I mean, it seems like it has such a broad effect on a whole variety of different kinds of ailments and diseases.
Yes.
And so including Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
It's been shown, for example, that people who are heavy meat eaters have about a threefold greater risk of Alzheimer's than those who don't.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to heart disease and diabetes and cancer and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic answer is consuming whole plant-based foods. That's the nearest thing to an idea that I can think of.
And have you seen any reversal of Alzheimer's through returning?
No, unfortunately, there hasn't been very much research done on this at all, and I'm not sure. If I were to guess, it might be a difficult one to reverse, but mm-hmm. who knows?
Certainly, I've heard individual cases of Alzheimer's being reversed by...
Oh, is that right?
This one woman, she was completely gone, and she, her daughter put her onto an absolute cleansing regime, cleaning out all the toxic waste and metals and so on, and then put her on an absolutely strict, strict raw diet, raw vegetarian, plant-based diet, and within 6 months she was back driving her car again.
Amazing. I'm just delighted to hear that, because I've been lecturing all over the country, and I keep learning about, you know, one disease after another that people are talking about, and many times physicians are telling me about this too.
Yes, and certainly if one person can reverse it, many others can too.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, there was a rather shocking article in the newspaper, actually a few days ago, about a lady's gentle pet monkey mauling a neighbor almost to the point of death, and it turns out that the owner was feeding this vegetarian animal meat and chicken. And, of course, we know about mad cow's disease, where farmers are feeding their vegetarian cattle with meat products. And has your research shown any correlation between animal protein diets and aggressiveness, violence, even attention deficit disorders and hyperactivity and so on?
Well, we didn't do it in our research, but I have a student.
Mm-hmm.
She did a PhD with us some years ago, and she was actually taking this kind of information, taking it to the public school system to get little kids to understand this and to use this. And then she had an opportunity to work at an incarceration place. You know, the young people had been were behind bars, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
She went to do it with them, too, and there was, unfortunately, quite a lot of violence in that community.
Yes.
When she got them involved in using this kind of food and preparing their own food, the reduction in violence was amazing.
Oh.
Truly amazing.
Oh.
And I think it's one of the areas that has not been considered hardly at all.
Yes.
I can make the suggestion for a reasonable basis that if prisons, for example, wanted to keep their inmates under better control,
yes,
just eat this kind of food.
Yes, I would just love to see this work in prisons where you just put them on a vegetarian diet and just start.
Right.
You've got this huge population research that you could do free of charge and they would get healthy at the very minimum.
And their violence would go down.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. It's something that needs to be done, at least needs to be explored,
yes,
in a systematic way.
Yes, wonderful. And how has the medical establishment received your book?
Well, the best thing to say is they've received it somewhat with silence. But in the recent times, I've given close to 300 lectures now since the book came out 4 years ago. Yes. And most of my lectures now are to medical conferences and medical venues and so forth. And I'm finding an increasing number of physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Coming forth, trying it, and getting very excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remember that medical doctors receive no training in nutrition.
Yes.
And I'm talking about none, zero.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sad, because the public tend to look at the physicians as being the authorities to consider, you know, when they're talking about nutrition, yet these people are the people who don't have any training in the area and tend to be sometimes hostile even against it.
Yes.
But on the other hand, rather than thinking about the negative, I'm thinking about the positive, because there are in fact, a lot of physicians that are now coming forth and trying it, getting proof for themselves.
That's right. Now, funding, of course, goes to the development of drugs or diagnostic technology. Why is funding not being given to research on nutrition, which is the basis for all health and disease?
That's an excellent question. Nutrition, it depends on how it's defined. If we consider nutrition to be just sort of the additive effects of individual nutrients, then, you know, you can sort of take these individual nutrients, make synthetic drugs, as we said before, get some patent protection and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the drug industry is based. On the other hand, nutrition is not that. Mm-hmm. Nutrition is the combined activities, the integrated combined activities for innumerable, countless things in food. One can't get patents for that.
Yes.
One can't make money on that.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, as a result, there's certainly little economic encouragement,
yeah,
for people to go into and practice this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so we have a really serious problem in the sense that the practitioners don't understand the information. And even if they did understand the information, the economic system is such that it's very difficult to put this into practice and
that's
make money
right.
on it.
That's right. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with you very quickly.
It's how you conduct yourself through the chances that you take.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Learn to fly. You are the teacher.
Is the key to life more than just another technique? In Chloe Wordsworth's new book, Quantum Change Made Easy, she shows that what you resonate with is the key to all positive change, self-healing, and achieving the best of who you are. Chloe introduces you to the 9 keys of the Resonance Repatterning System for harmonizing your energy and turning your problems into joy. You can order Quantum Change Made Easy at Amazon.com or your local bookstore. To have a session, go to ResonanceRepatterning.net for certified practitioners. You can also learn to do sessions on yourself by attending Resonance Repatterning seminars. Experience the magic of helping yourself and others with a system that combines scientific and spiritual principles. Go to ResonanceRepatterning.net for seminars, practitioners, and self-healing products. Listen to Chloe on the 7th Wave Network every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time.
Listen closely, because I'm about to ask you something that has probably never crossed your mind. Did you know that physical illness, depression, toxic relationships, financial struggles, even obesity, all have their roots in dysfunctional family patterns? Liz Tobin, a certified resonance repatterning practitioner, can help you begin to heal today. This breakthrough technique enables you to create positive change in any area of your life. You will effortlessly respond differently to situations and begin to attract new scenarios and opportunities in your life. Here is what people are saying about the Clearing Family Patterns Proxy Group.
This is planetary healing on a group level.
I've had this constant backache my whole life. It disappeared after just one session.
When you join the Clearing Family Patterns Proxy Group, you can clear these patterns. You'll be amazed at how each session seems tailored just for you. Try a free demonstration today. Learn more at LizTobin.com.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Learn to fly. You are the teacher. Learn to trust your wings, and the rest will follow after.
You're listening to Living in Tune. Turn your problems into joy with your host, Chloe Faith Wordsworth. Now back to the program. Here's Chloe.
Professor Campbell, author of the very famous China study that's making waves and really having an impact on people's health. And Professor Campbell, there's a lot of nutritional research proving that a plant-based diet is essential for total health and an animal-based diet is associated with disease. Why isn't this research made public so that everyone knows about it? I can understand that in terms of the pharmaceuticals, education is not really their job, but why are we not being educated?
Well, we've been cultured now for many decades with this model that I mentioned before about thinking about what nutrition is and what it's not, and so it doesn't fit the economic system in terms of getting, you know, intellectual property protection and that kind of thing. But it's so entrenched in our minds these days that it's even hard for the average person to sort of come to terms with this new kind of information. And so you get resistance, too, from the industries that are huge and that, you know, are doing things that are opposed to this. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry obviously wants to use drugs as a means of health.
Yeah.
And the people tend to believe that. And so they aren't very happy with this kind of information. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, too much of the food industry itself, you know, the livestock industry, especially the dairy industry, the egg industry and industries like that, they aren't going to be very happy about this either.
No.
They're going to sort of resist it. And then, of course, there's another kind of industry emerged in the recent years. We could call it the processed food industry, if you will, or the convenience food industry, fast food industry. I mean, those people are taking, you know, they're taking bits of plants like sugar and white flour and maybe some oil out of the plants, and they're putting it together and making a donut.
Yeah.
You know, or a Danish.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kinds of foods are problematic, too, because it's, even though they're plant-based, they're not the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yes.
And so you got these huge industries, and then you have the medical system itself, the health industry,
mm-hmm.
who are practicing their art by using the drugs and not understanding the nutrition.
Yes.
So we have a paradigm, a worldview, within which we live that simply is just resisting this kind of information on every front. And the politicians tend to go along with this, too, because the expert panels and organizations like that that I've been a member of, I know this firsthand, the government agencies too often are in bed with the corporate world. And a few academic people who sort of side with the corporate world. And so we get public information that's inappropriate. And the public is basically not getting this information. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons people don't understand this.
Yeah.
Because whether it's through labeling or whether it's through advice given to schools or other kinds of policy issues,
mm-hmm.
this kind of information that I'm not talking about does not fit our current economic model.
Yeah.
I would like to make one statement that today our healthcare business is in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And is in crisis in large measure simply because we're not using the kind of information that actually can improve health and reduce healthcare costs by improving health.
That's right.
It's not working, and it's important for us to consider that.
Yeah, this is very important. And, you know, you even see that in schools they think of French fries as being a vegetable.
Right. It's a joke.
Oh, dear. Well, what fascinates me personally also is that even in plant-eating people, there's quite a broad spectrum. You know, vegetarians who eat junk food and processed pasta-type foods, and vegans who eat high-protein and fat diets, and vegans who eat mostly cooked foods, and vegans like myself who eat only raw, uncooked foods. So as I've been a vegetarian for over 40 years, and I notice a huge difference between eating plant-based food in their raw, natural state as compared to their cooked state. And I also notice a huge difference after lowering my protein intake in the form I was doing quite a bit of snacking on nuts and seeds. And Hippocrates Institute, they have reversed cancer over and over again through putting their clients on a raw vegetarian diet. And Dr. Gabriel Cousins at the Tree of Life Center here in Arizona, they put very serious diabetic cases on a raw vegetarian diet, and within 2 weeks, they were off all insulin and all their numbers and blood tests had normalized. So do you think that a China-type study would ever be done here in the USA that would look at the spectrum of plant-based eaters as well as animal eaters?
Well, we couldn't do the kind of study we did in China, in part because there we had the advantage of the fact that people tended to live in the same regions all their lives,
mm-hmm.
and they used their locally produced food, mm-hmm. so we could actually get a comparison of people who were reasonably stable in their residence and eating patterns, which is important for doing this kind of research. We can't do that here because people move all over the place and they get food from all over the place and so forth. So from that perspective, it's not possible to do it here, but we can, though, turn our attention to doing the kind of research that we need to do that we're not doing, you know, that addresses these kind of questions, you know, from a whole foods perspective.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the National Institutes of Health, the chief source of funding for this country, for medical research funding in this country, is made up of 27 institutes and centers and programs, 27, and not one of them is the Institute of Nutrition. So they ignore it, too, and I've served as an advisor to them on so-called study section panels, determining, you know, which grants get funded, which ones don't. So, I've seen it firsthand.
Yes. But NIH is government-funded, isn't it?
That's right. It's just taxpayer money.
Yeah.
And so the taxpayer money is being used to send to the government to support, basically, the pharmaceutical industry and other issues like that.
Yes. So it's basically, if President Obama wanted to, he could really have an impact on NIH and say, we want research on foods.
Absolutely. I mean, I really am very impressed with President Obama and what he's just of him as a person and his interest and his open-mindedness.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think he does not know about this.
Yes.
And somehow this message needs to be brought to him because this is where healthcare costs can be brought under control.
That's right. And basically, it's the only way to do it because as long as the pharmaceuticals are funding research projects, it's always going to be in terms of drugs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, unfortunately, President Obama and his people at the present time are not aware of this, and I think to some extent they're going down the wrong road.
Yes. Well, let's let President Obama know about this. I think there's a big possibility here. And so, Professor Campbell, what do you see your continuing role to be in the future in terms of your vision? I mean, we've really seen that research is needed. What can you do to create change?
Well, for one thing, creating information, as you're doing, as I'm trying to do, and with my colleagues, just simply making people aware, and the government can certainly help us a lot in doing that, acknowledge the fact that this is important information and kind of paving a way, opportunities or creating opportunities for us to do this. That's first. But being aware of information is not enough. And so I'm involved with my son and sons, I should say, and others attempting to demonstrate for people who will enter into a program like this, experience the effects,
yes.
And then they can see for themselves. And I think these kinds of efforts need to be grassroots
mm-hmm.
in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Going in from the top down is not really possible, I think.
Yes.
They need to get out of the way, you know,
yeah.
in terms of what they're doing. But in terms of, you know, actually creating something that the public will use on a person-by-person basis, we need to actually create opportunities for them to actually experience this.
Yes.
For the disbelievers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will see their results, and they will tell others, and so it will go.
That's right. And your website is www.tcolincampbell.org. .org. So people who are interested in your work and where you're continuing with your work really recommend that you stay in touch with Professor Campbell's website, and also I would order a book of the China Studies. Absolutely fascinating. I got it and couldn't stop reading it, and I've read thousands of nutritional books, so I really recommend that too. Well, Professor Campbell, thank you so much for being with us today and for this extraordinary work that you've done and are doing.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's
wonderful. And I'd like to stay in touch with you. I want to get in touch with Professor Obama and get the NIH funding for research on plant-based foods in USA.
That'd be a great project.
Because, you know, you're saying that people travel around, but I travel everywhere, and I still stay on my vegetarian, plant-based, raw food diet. So I think in America, although people travel, they do tend to eat the same foods, whether it's, you know, their Big Mac or whatever, wherever they go, it tends to be the same, doesn't it?
That's right.
So,
everything is franchised into one model.
That's right. Anyway, I think there's a lot of hope here. So thank you so much for being part of this hopeful new possibility.
Well, thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Good. So next week, I'm going to be doing a very powerful Yokuana repatterning, a new repatterning. I'm going to be talking about some of the happiest people on this earth, the Yokuana and Toripon Indians from the jungles of Venezuela, discover the secrets of their happiness, and learn how resonance repatterning can help us change our resonance so we can respond with the same human joy and confidence as these people do. Learn the 9 principles I've extracted from the way of life of the Yokuana and how we can integrate these principles into our lives by using the resonance repatterning processes. I will be doing the new repatterning, and I've invited a special guest to receive it so you can sit back and enjoy proxying into it. Join us March the 25th, 8 a.m., 8 p.m. PST, Pacific Standard Time. Remember, you can download all the transcripts of these shows. The transcripts often have much more information than is found in the radio show when we have a tendency to run out of time. And please go to our website, resonancerepatterning.net, for practitioners in your local area and teachers who can teach you how to use this wonderful work on yourself, on other people, making a big difference in yourself and in our whole world. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful being with you, and have a terrific week.
Thank you for listening to Living in Tune. Turn your problems into joy. Join your host, Chloe Faith Wordsworth, next Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Today I saw the sun up in the sky. Tomorrow I'll touch a star. If you have never tried your best,